It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG @FaderoutePodcast, or drop us a line on X @FaderoutDNZ, and you could be next. Part 2 of our interview with Arthur Staple of The Athletic starts right now. If you missed Part 1, don't worry about it. Go back to our long-form episode from this week. It's there for you. We're here with Arthur Staple from The Athletic. And Arthur, another season, another year, the President's Trophy winner doesn't hoist the cup. So pour one out again for the 2012 Chicago Blackhawks. In fact, neither one seed advanced to the conference finals because Carolina beat the Caps. So do you consider this a net positive or a net negative for the league?
You know, it's an interesting one because kind of like we were just talking about, there's teams that figure it out. And the NHL is such a grind. It's the closest thing that we've got to the NFL, you know, in terms of a sport that plays a lot more, where the games just kind of wear you down because of the physicality of the sport. And by game 82, you know, I think you see the team with the most points, and you're not always convinced as you're going into the playoffs that that's the team that's best positioned to have a long run. You know, when, especially in a year like this year where Winnipeg and Washington, like you mentioned, were the top seeds, Winnipeg wins the President's Trophy. You looked at them and said, okay, Connor Hellebuyck, probably going to win the Vezina. He seems like he's been the best goalie all year. But do you see enough other things with that team to say, can they win four rounds? Especially if this guy, Hellebuyck, is not playing at the top of his game, which he's really had a kind of, I don't know if it's mental or whatever, but his playoff record is terrible over the years. And he again looked pretty shaky and them just barely squeaking by St. Louis and then getting eliminated there in the second round. So, you know, I think for them and for Washington, who really wasn't a team that was expected to do that well and was kind of on a real heater. You look back a couple of years ago to the Bruins, had a record-setting regular season, and then they lost to the Panthers after they were up 3-1 in the first round. So, you know, I think it's not really about the team that's had the best regular season. The playoffs is such a different entity. You know, it lasts so long. It's such a grind. You really have to be, you know, fully healthy when you get there. You have to be fully operational. I think we saw Washington got off to such a good start this year. They were kind of neck and neck for that President's Trophy, but they were about a 500 team down the stretch. You know, once Alex Ovechkin got the goal record, that was really the focus there last month. They knew where they were going to be. And again, kind of like the NFL, when you see a team that starts off, whatever, 13-2, those last 2 weeks, do they rest guys? Do they not? How do you go into the playoffs? Do you want the bye week? Do you not want the bye week? For hockey, it's a similar thing. Even though the game, you know, they play five times as many games, it's a war of attrition, and you have to be in the right mental state. You have to be in the right physical state as a team going into the playoffs, or else it can back up on you fast. You can run into a goalie who's playing incredibly well. You can just not be at your best because you have to beat a team four times. It's incredibly difficult. So I feel like it's not necessarily a curse, but it's not something. I think you have to look a little deeper. You know, if the Panthers had been the President's Trophy winner this year, I don't think people would have felt like it was a jinx because of just the way that they've been a machine in the last two postseasons and the way they are again right now. You know, so it does seem to be that it's not really a consistent thing where a team wins the President's Trophy year after year. It's not something I think that a lot of teams strive for that have, you know, teams like Florida. You go back to the mid-2010s, you mentioned the Hawks or the Kings. Those teams know once you get through it once, you just got to get in. You know, it doesn't matter where you finish. Doesn't matter if you have home ice or whatever. You just got to get in and get on a roll. And I think that's the mentality that the good teams have. Not necessarily let's win the regular season and show everybody how good we are.
All you have to do is look back 1 year, right? The New York Rangers were the President's Trophy winners. High-flying, high-octane offense. And then what happened? The playoffs come and where'd it go? It's gone. It is... Nowhere to be seen. But speaking of the Rangers, we are, in fact, a New York sports show. So let's talk about that. Let's delve into all the locals that were watching at home along with us. So the Rangers had an extremely disappointing, controversial season. Just 1 year removed from that President's Trophy, like I mentioned. They seem to play without passion for good stretches, and defense out the window. So out goes Peter Laviolette. In comes former Penguin head coach and former Rangers assistant coach under John Tortorella, Mike Sullivan. So what can Ranger fans expect this summer and next season?
You know, it's a big... getting Mike Sullivan was huge, obviously. And really, once they fired Peter Laviolette and the Penguins decided to go in a different direction with Sullivan, it was kind of seemed like an obvious pairing. I don't think Mike Sullivan had a lot of other options that he was considering. The Rangers have been wanting to hire Mike Sullivan since Chris Drury got the general manager's job 4 years ago when he fired David Quinn and was kind of sitting around waiting to see if Mike Sullivan would be available. And when he fired Gerard Gallant and hired Peter Laviolette, Mike Sullivan definitely wasn't available, but I'm sure they wanted him to be. So here they finally got their guy, and I think that's going to make a big difference for the Rangers. You know, the fact that they were so awful, like you said, played so dispassionately and looked like such a mess for such a long time, and they still managed to finish, whatever it was, 6 or 7 points out of the playoffs. This is a playoff team. You know, the fact that they missed, so many different factors went into it this past year. But the room essentially, I think Igor Shesterkin said it on breakup days, that something broke in the middle of the season and we couldn't fix it. It's absolutely true. You know, I think it broke a lot earlier than the middle of the season when they went, whatever it was, 4-15 through the end of November and through December. You know, getting rid of Barkley Goodrow, who had been one of the first players that Drury acquired and then signed to a pretty long-term deal, you know, was a guy who wore a letter. One of the leaders had a guy who had been a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion, kind of came in and gave them this air of legitimacy after they had struggled for a few years, and then they went to the conference final in 2022. You know, he had a lot to do with that, I think, in the room. They moved him out via waivers in the summer, kind of an unexpected move. They tried to get Jacob Trouba out, who was their captain. And so they're going into the season trying to make these changes, and you can, as a GM, justify the changes. They needed to get a little younger. I think they needed to get a little bit faster. But the way that you go about them with a veteran team, you know, kind of a veteran team, even though it's a mix of very young guys and some more senior guys, it just kind of shook up the room to start the season. And even though they started off the season pretty well, clearly management wasn't happy. They end up trading Trouba. They end up trading Kaapo Kakko, shifting some things around. They do bring in JT Miller. But trying to change so much in the middle of a season, it just doesn't really work. And I think it was too much upheaval for this group to really recover from it. And you add in a coach in Peter Laviolette, who's had a lot of different stops over his career in the NHL. And from year one to year two, or year two to year three, there's always been a big drop-off. And I think it has a lot to do with his adaptability, his willingness to be a little bit more flexible with their structure, you know, and their defensive system, just having goaltending like they got the year before last with Igor Shesterkin and Jonathan Quick covered up a lot of their mistakes. Shesterkin is obviously one of the best goalies in the league. And even this year, he had some pretty good underlying numbers, but the barrage he was under every night of guys wide open in front of the net, forwards not knowing where to track back and pick guys up, playing a man-to-man in the defensive zone with some maybe immobile defensemen. It just was one big mess. And it became a mess pretty quickly and stayed a mess for way too long. And like you said, kind of completely erased what they had accomplished the year before. President's Trophy winners, 2 wins away from a Stanley Cup final. Amazing fall in 12 months, and Laviolette was out, and like we said, they traded a bunch of guys. So Sullivan is an important piece to bring in because he is a veteran guy. He's very good with players, especially with big name players. His connection with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin has really helped the Penguins, even though they haven't been good the last few years. But there's a lot of work to be done for Chris Drury this summer. You know, are they going to trade Chris Kreider, try to get his contract off the books and try to make some adjustments? Are they going to trade Mika Zibanejad, who has a full no-move clause, so that's really... Trading him is kind of the second thing. The first part is, can you convince him that he wants to be somewhere else? Same goes for Artemi Panarin, who's only got 1 year left and may have some appeal because he's still playing at a high level. But again, you have to convince him that it's time to go somewhere else. So There's a lot going on with this team this summer. They don't have a lot of cap space as the team is currently constituted, so they don't make any of these trades. Not going to be a lot of changes either. So it's going to be Mike Sullivan trying to rally the troops with the same guys who just laid an egg for 82 games last season. So it'll be an interesting couple of months for them heading into next month with the draft, with free agency, when trades are being made, moves are happening all around the league. They have a lot of work to do, and it's going to be interesting. I still feel like even bringing the same group back, they are a playoff team. They don't play in a very difficult division. They were good for the previous 3 years, so I think they can get back to some level of respectability, but I don't know that they can reach the heights that they reached.
No, I mean, they're another year older, another year slower. I agree with that. With Kreider, he at least has familiarity with Sullivan, so I think going back to the Torts days, so I don't know if he's the odd man out, really. Panarin, he's linked to the Ducks. I saw a rumor of him. For some reason, Chris Drury seems in love with Trevor Zegras. So, you know, I'm seeing a bunch of rumors with that, and then clearing out the space and bringing in Mitch Marner. Like, is Mitch Marner the answer here? I'm not 100% sure that Mitch Marner is the answer for the Rangers.
I mean, they do like their big names, certainly when it comes to free agency or trades. You know, I think James Dolan has had that kind of through line in the 25 years he's owned the team. That, you know, you go back to whether it's Mark Messier or Pavel Bure or Eric Lindros way back when in the dark days of the pre-lockout under Glenn Sather. They do like to pile up the big names if they can do it. You can think back to even a couple of years ago when they traded for Patrick Kane. So Mitch Marner, if he's out there, maybe that's an appealing possibility. I would imagine for what the Rangers are trying to do with their roster, that a guy like Sam Bennett from Florida would probably be a little bit more appealing if they can move Zibanejad out and bring in a more, you know, rough around the edges skilled guy like Bennett rather than some of their highly skilled guys who don't really play with that sandpaper edge that they're wanting from guys like JT Miller, from guys like Vincent Trocheck. And like I said with Panarin, if you can convince him that Southern California is the place he wants to be, then maybe you can make it happen. But I think that convincing part could be difficult. You know, Panarin signed here. He got the full no move. You know, I think even Zibanejad said a couple of times towards the end of the season, like, I negotiated this deal. They gave me the full no move. And, you know, they didn't have to do it, but they did. And that's what I asked for. So it's in my hands. And that to me sounds like a guy who's not going anywhere. Zibanejad obviously has a few more years left on his deal. So maybe for Panarin with 1 year left, he could be convinced. But, that kind of working on a lot of different fronts for a guy like Drury, where you have to do this cajoling with your star players to get them to want to be somewhere else and then make a decent trade or free up the cap space and then convince somebody to sign here. It's a lot. It's going to be a busy few weeks for them, and 100% see how they come out.
Yeah.
Was it the right move to dump, you know, Laviolette and keep Drury, or would you have preferred them both go?
Dolan gave Chris Drury an extension in fact. So, I think he went the opposite direction. It's been an interesting tenure for Drury. I think he's made some good moves. You know, you think back to his first year on the job, they had a lot of cap space and a lot of picks, and they turned that into Andrew Kopp, Frank Vatrano, guys that were instrumental in them getting as far as they did to game six of the Eastern Conference Final against Tampa 2 years ago. You know, it looked like the small additions that they'd made were going to pay off. Adding a guy like Jonathan Quick to the goalie room, he's been a real boon for Shesterkin, a guy who's, you know, really been a good teammate, I think, for a lot of guys. I can't completely fault Drury, but I feel like the way that he's gone about kind of, handling the group, you know, you give the captaincy to Jacob Trouba, and then within 2 years, you're essentially trashing him and saying he's not going to, shouldn't be here. I don't know if that's, the personnel management part of it is a big part. You have to know your players, and I don't know that they've taken care to know them or care to know what makes them tick. And seeing the way that they fell apart, you know, I think a lot of fans were kind of like, oh, these guys are fragile or whatever. It's like, this would have been the same outcome no matter who, you know. It could have been Connor McDavid. It could have been Sidney Crosby's team. Like, you can't do that to players in the middle of the season, especially the ones that are part of your leadership core. and expect it to have no effect on anybody else. So that part, I think, for Drury probably needs a lot of work. And Laviolette, you know, I think it was a little quick, but, you know, the writing was probably on the wall that he had no answers to what was going on. It may not have been entirely on him, all this, you know, the roster stuff and the room kind of disconnecting. But I, like I said, with Sullivan, you got to be able to manage the motivational side, the emotional side of your room, as well as the X's and O's. And if you don't have any X's and O's answers and you don't have any motivational answers, then yeah, your time is probably going to come to an end. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it. A lot of the blame falls on Laviolette, and we'll see if he gets another job anytime soon. He certainly, you know, you can't discount what he done, what he did the year before. But yeah, it's, you know, it'll be interesting to me to see. You've got Sullivan now assigned a 5-year contract. Drury does have this extension. But if they're bad again next year, you're not turning around and firing this guy you just hired as a coach for 5 years and given the, you know, the highest contract to any coach in the league. Then the heat's really going to be on Chris Drury, and we'll see what happens then. So it is a pressure-packed offseason for the GM and going to be a pressure-packed 100%. Season for him
and
too.
Usually when the back is against the wall, that's when stupid decisions get made, like blowing up your farm system for an Eric Lindros who had a concussion problem. So, you know. But, you know, we'll get you out of here on this one, Arthur. You know, you mentioned some diamonds in the rough, right? They need to be polished. And, you know, let's talk some NHL draft, right? And I don't believe this. We're going to talk Islander hockey on this show. So the Islanders won the draft lottery and are in prime position to take a franchise-altering player. So there are plenty of high-ceiling players out there. You have Matthew Schaefer, you have Michael Misa, you have James Hagans. They're all available to choose from, and the Isles have plenty of needs. So if you were the GM, who are you taking and why? Or are you listening for a trade?
You know, I think they're in a position where they need to make this pick. They like completely lucked into it. What do they have, 3.5% chance to win it? They're the only team that goes into the draft lottery with no GM. And, you know, it's such an odd, hilarious thing to have happen where they're, you know, their Islander fans are kind of like, hey, we won this lottery kind of out of, you know, this 10th spot with barely any chance, but we're just kind of waiting to see who's going to be the guy that's going to make the pick. I think for them, they need to make the pick. And despite the sentimental part with James Hagans, who's a Long Island kid and grew up an Islander fan and, you know, throughout his youth hockey career on Long Island, was coached by a few former Islanders because it's a pretty good network of youth hockey that a lot of Islanders alumni who've stayed on the island, raised their kids there, kind of started a lot of hockey programs, built a lot of them up. There's guys like Eric Bolton, Aaron Asham, even Garth Snow is the former GM, coaches a lot of youth hockey out there. And it's kind of a nice program for the island, and it's been a way to develop a lot of Islander fans because they've been a little bit better in the last few years. So James Hagans and his brother played at BC. They're big Islander fans, and I know that their family would be completely jazzed if that was the case. But it does seem to me that you've got that elite group of 5 or 6 prospects that's kind of the consensus group that all the draft gurus have. And there's only one defenseman in that group, and that's Matthew Schaefer. And to pass up on a guy who could be your number one defenseman for a lot of years, he's a big, tall, rangy kid. He can skate really well. He's got good offense, got good defensive instincts. That's hard to pass up. You know, it's they have Noah Dobson there, who's a restricted free agent this year. They picked in the first round, 7 years ago, and he's blossomed into a very good top 4 defenseman. But I don't know if he's a guy that can shoulder the load. He's not going to be a Drew Doughty. He's not going to be a, if you want a younger guy, he's not going to be an Adam Fox or a Jake Sanderson. If the Islanders could get Schaefer in there, and they do have, you know, they're kind of their calling card when they were good a few years ago was their defense. Those guys are older. They're still signed there. Guys like Ryan Pulock and Adam Pellick and Scott Mayfield, Lou Lamoriello gave them all very long contracts. And they've all broken down because they play a hard game, and the Islanders, you know, kind of their call, like I said, their calling card was to grind you down and win low scoring close games. But these guys miss 20, 30 games a year now with injuries. So you do need to replenish that group. And I think Schaefer really, to me, is a no-brainer. You know, sure, you're going to entertain some offers if people want to move up and take this kid, but you're never really going to get huge value back. You're not going to get a surefire top four defenseman. You're not going to get a surefire top two centerman or top six forward for this for the number one pick for someone moving up two spots. It's just not something that really happens. So I'm sure that they'll entertain, and I can't say I'm sure about anything because they still don't have a GM. It's been a month since they fired Lou Lamoriello or decided not to renew his contract, and it's been a lot of twists and turns in this search. So, you know, with draft combine coming up in a couple of weeks, I think time is ticking. They do need to get somebody in there to start making a plan and, you know, assessing with their scouts and figuring out what they're going to do. But all my indications are they know that Matthew Schaefer is the guy. Unless they learn something different or they can get a huge haul back and moving back, they're not going
to
do
Yeah, I mean, for me, the barometer is the Eric Lindros trade from the Nordiques to the Flyers. If you can get that level haul back, sure, of course, you make that trade. But where you end up with Peter Forsberg, you know, I'll just take Peter Forsberg, no big deal. But, you know, the way you're describing Schaefer, like you're giving him all of these accolades, and like immediately I'm thinking like Zdeno Chara. Like you're describing Zdeno Chara all over again. And if the Islanders can actually have a redo with a guy who could be like that, I think they would do that in a heartbeat. So I think you're definitely onto something there.
Yeah. They have a lot of work to do. We talked about the Rangers. The Islanders have a ton of work to do, and obviously finding a GM to put it all together is their priority number one. But even after that, this is not going to be a quick process for them to get back to where they were in 2020 and 2021. They've got a lot of changes to make, a lot of turnover on the roster. They've got to add some people to their front office, which is a pretty small one under Lamoriello. It's a big undertaking, you know, and there's some guys that, they wanted Kenny Holland to come in there. And I think he thought this might be too big a job, take too much time longer than I think he thought ownership thought it could be, which is probably why he said no to it and ended up in LA, the team that's much closer to being a Stanley Cup contender. So whoever comes in here knows that it's going to be a big job. And I think if you need a couple of years to kind of get going again and produce something, you take the best guy you can find at number one and make him part of your cornerstone going forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. Arthur Staple, you are now our cornerstone. You're our hockey guy. Thank you for joining us here on the In Route, the newest member of the In Crowd. And if you want to be a member of the In Crowd, if you want to join us on the In Route, hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at @FaderoutePodcast or drop us a line on X at @FaderoutDNZ, and you could join us on the In Route. Arthur Staple of The Athletic, thank you so much for joining us. And where can our fans find you? And do you have any special projects coming up?
Nothing too much. I'm on X, Twitter at Stape Athletic, on Blue Sky as well, and at The Athletic. You can read my stuff covering two teams that have a lot of stuff they need to get done this summer. So it's going to be a busy
one. Lots of interesting reads. Well, Arthur Staple, thank you for joining us, and we will definitely be in touch again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.